Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the command zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Wish we could turn back time to the good old days when the mama sang us to sleep, but now we're stressed out.
I was like, are we gonna do it again?
It's waka 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 waka.
It's relevant on two levels. We'll let everybody else out there figure it out.
We're going deep today here in the Command Zone. Anyway, how's it going? What's up, everybody? You are watching / listening to the Command Zone podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai. All right, M21 is here.
Yeah.
We did the best new commanders. We went through all the legendary creatures last week, and now we're starting on our set review of all the cards that will be able to go in the 99.
Yeah. You know what? I'm actually pretty stoked. Got a look at all the cards, and I think it's a pretty exciting core set overall. There are a few things in here that just make me go, okay, power level increased.
Yeah, there are some eye-popping reprints too.
Yes.
But a lot of really cool brand new cards that I think are going to make a splash in the format. Before we get into it, as always, you can support this show by supporting our sponsors. If you go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone right now, you can pre-order the M21 stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we're about to talk about a bunch of cards that you're going to want to get your hands on. So,
and those reprints.
Oh, you definitely want the reprint. Grim Tutor? I mean...
1999, I was young when that card came out.
That card was $200 like a month ago. So if you want to pre-order any of this stuff, obviously there's a lot coming down the pipe. There's been so much coming out recently too. You may not have caught up with all the Ikoria stuff,
yeah,
with all the mystery boosters, with it's crazy. There's no shortage of things you probably want to get your hand on. So again,
Jumpstart too. Holy moly.
Cardkingdom.com/commands. And you're going to buy Magic cards anyway. If you just use that affiliate link, when you do, you really are supporting all of our content.
So simple. And you know what? What's great with new releases? That means Ultra Pro or other sponsors coming out with new playmats, new sleeves, everything, the accoutrement to make your playmat and your area look awesome when you play. Not to mention some of these special new cards. Grim Tutor needs to go in a sleeve.
Oh, you gotta put Grim
you
Tutor
better
into
put
an
in a sleeve. And they have that other alternate version, which looks really great. Jeffrey Palmer also did a cool animated version of that. And you know, if you're me, you're putting it into a double sleeve. And guess what? Ultra Pro has your bases covered. Josh and I have trusted them for years going on now, and they have been the most consistent. Their quality is sturdy, and I love using the product straight up.
I feel very safe when my cards are an Ultra Pro product.
Agreed.
So, yeah, and the final way to support all of our content is directly if you go to patreon.com/commandzone. You can qualify for all kinds of cool perks like interacting with Jimmy and myself on our Discord each and every day. Yeah. You also get to do things like watch game nights earlier than anybody else. And spoiler alert, there's a game nights for M21 that's being worked on now.
Ooh.
We managed to, things loosened up a little bit here from the pandemic, and we were able to film one episode. We had to make a few changes, but we have limited time to do it. We're still going to get it out for you. So if you want to see that early, patreon.com/commandzone.
And we call it one lucky patron every single episode. So this episode is
dedicated to
Kyle Carrasco.
Kyle, you rock.
Carrasco. Carrasco. I wonder if you like spicy things.
I'm going to assume so because Kyle sounds like a cool person.
Yeah, totally.
Quick note, this set review is actually going to be split up into two parts. So this is part one. We're going to go through some of the cycles and a couple of the colors. And then part two, hopefully later this week, we'll cover the rest of the colors, obviously.
Yeah, make it a little more digestible for you all as well.
Make it a little easier on the editing team.
Yeah, a little bit easier overall.
2 hour long episodes in the same amount of time. We get a couple extra days this way for the second half, and I think most people probably watch it in pieces anyway, so hopefully it won't bother anybody out there. All right,
let's get they finish this episode, the next one will be
out. All right, so part one of our M21 set review. Again, we did do our new commander review last week, so go ahead and go check that out, but we're not going to be discussing the legendary creatures from the set today. We're only going to talk about the cards that go into the 99.
Yeah, and normally we don't talk about reprints. There are always reprints in every set, but this one is actually kind of special because the reprints, they look like they have a finger pointed directly at our format and being like, this one's for you guys. It's for y'all.
It really does feel like they were like, all right, what commander reprints can we throw into this set? How many can we do? And they did quite a few.
Yeah.
So let's run them down. Azusa, Lost But Seeking.
Much needed.
Yeah, tons of decks play that card.
Ugin,
the Spirit Dragon.
Great Eugene, everyone.
Possibly the best Planeswalker in the format, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's got everything you want on it, to be serious.
Unless you're playing against Cassius, in which case it's the worst Planeswalker in the format.
Yeah, you're like, turn three, how? Massacre Worm, just a card that sometimes can just win games out of nowhere.
Yep.
Heroic Intervention.
I was really shocked by how expensive Heroic Intervention had gotten.
Yeah.
Which just shows like how many green decks are playing that card. So it's a much needed reprint. That's
super
pretty
efficient,
awesome.
Too. And like we mentioned, Grim Tutor.
Grim Tutor's kind of the big headliner of the set, but it's not every set that has every like standard legal set, especially. Like you see like Mana Crypt get reprinted, but it's in Eternal Masters or one of these like $10 booster pack sets. This is a $200 card previous to, you know, its announcement as a reprint that's going into, you know, $3 booster packs or $4 booster packs. Pretty cool.
It's not the best tutor, but it is still a pretty good tutor.
I'd say it's pretty great. I mean, like, I didn't have one before this, and so
you didn't have the starter pack in 1999 when it came in.
So Demonic Tutor and Vampiric obviously go in the decks, and then after that it's like Beseech the Queen, which is it's pretty good. Then you're up to like Diabolic Tutor and stuff, and this is much better than those two. So I think I don't play a lot of tutors in my decks, but in my more powerful, more push decks, you do want that kind of thing. So access to Grim Tutor, I think a lot of people are going to enjoy.
Yeah. And also, this is one that isn't like super flashy, but Cultivate. This is a card that also slowly creeps up in price over time because it is a staple in every green deck pretty much. And for the budget players, now you get a version of it that's easy to get and you can crack it in a booster that's very easily accessible. They print the crap out of these core sets. So these cards, thankfully, I think are going to be everywhere.
Yeah. I bet Mitch is happy about Cultivate because it's a card that, you know, in budget decks, when you used to build $50 decks, I was talking about how a lot of these things that used to be cheap staples, if they don't get reprinted often, they just start to creep up to the point where like $2 or so, and he can't even put them in budget decks. And you know, quick note here, Cultivate and Kodama's Reach, when we did our stats episodes a couple years ago, were two of the winningest cards in the format. If you have those cards in your deck, you're more likely to win. Just more lands in play.
Lands
are
good.
Thing. So
there are a bunch of more reprints, of course. We're not going to talk about all of them. Fabled Passage, Containment Priest. These are all cards that see a lot of play. Fabled Passage, I have a sneaking suspicion, is going to get reprinted a lot.
I hope so.
It's a great card, and it's an awesome way to give a basic fetch land to decks that need it.
All right. So, yeah, pretty cool on the reprint front, but let's talk about what everyone's the most excited about, besides Grim Tutor, which is the new cards. So there's a couple of there's one cycle in in this set, and it's something people have been asking for a while.
Yeah, our good friend Wes, who we used to draft and play a lot with, had built entire decks just around this idea.
And this is before these six new ones came out, so it's the Shrines.
Shrines.
So they were in Kamigawa before, but there were only five of them, and they all care about how many shrines you have, so it's really hard to build a shrine deck because there was only five.
Yeah.
And now there's six new ones.
Yeah, and not to mention, one of these is the granddaddy of all shrines. It's literally called the Sanctum of All. That's the shrine sound. Every time you play it, this trigger happens. So this is a Wooburg card that's a legendary enchantment shrine. And it says, at the beginning of your upkeep, you may search your library and or graveyard for a shrine card and put it onto the battlefield. If you search your library this way, shuffle it. And if an ability of another shrine you control triggers while you control six or more shrines, that ability triggers an additional time. So this is cool. This immediately tutors out a shrine onto the battlefield in a Wooburg deck. Plenty of ways to find this enchantment because it's, you know, you can tutor out enchantments pretty easily in these colors because you have all of them.
Yep.
And bam, you're just putting a bunch of them onto the battlefield every single upkeep.
It's your
every single one. Your upkeep, sorry.
Yeah, it's 5 mana, but it allows you to go find whatever the best shrine is for the deck that you've built and mm-hmm. guarantee it's like a second copy of that shrine in a lot of ways.
Right, right.
Yeah, I think that having 6 shrines on the battlefield is a little bit like you're probably just winning by a lot if that's happened and you don't need the second trigger, but hey, why not?
Yeah, and you're just hoping no one has Bane of Progress or anything in their deck.
I mean, if they do, they never let you get to 5, right?
Like, yeah. I mean, like, and these are not cheap cards to play either. Some of them are in the 4, 5, 6 mana range. So let's talk about this new cycle. They're all uncommons, and there's one for each color, and they're all legendary enchantments. Now, the thing about Sanctum of All is that it's only on your upkeep, but it is a very powerful ability, I think.
And a lot of the shrines, especially the old ones, trigger on your upkeep.
Right.
So
there were the Hondins, by the way.
Yeah.
The Hondin of Cleansing Fire, Infinite Rage, Life's Web, Night's Reach, and Seeing Winds.
Should we read the 5 monocolor ones here, and then we can kind of go through the cards that kind of go?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Okay, so the white one is called Sanctum of Tranquil Light. It's just 1 white mana. These are all legendary enchantment shrines.
Oh, that's actually really cheap for a shrine, by the way.
Yeah. The fact that they're legendary does come up because you can't copy them mm-hmm. and things like that, so be aware. Sanctum of Tranquil Light has an activated ability. So it's an enchantment with an activated ability. You pay 5 and a white, and you tap target creature. But this ability costs 1 less to activate for each shrine you control.
Ah.
So if you have like 5 shrines, it's just white, and you can do this as many times as you have the mana to do it. So you could tap 5 creatures if you had, you know, enough mana to do that.
If you have 5 shrines. Ugh. Okay. Yeah. But it could cost less, and it's the more important thing is that it only costs 1 to cast. The Sanctum of Calm Waters, can you guess? It's blue. Is 3 in the blue. Legendary Enchantment Shrine. At the beginning of your pre-combat main phase, you may draw X cards, where X is the number of shrines you control. If you do, discard a card. Now, this is new. Typically, the shrines were at upkeep, and this is at the beginning of your pre-combat main phase.
Yeah.
So, interesting.
But, of course, it draws cards.
Yeah. X cards, by the way. So, you know, again, if you have...
It's just going to loot if it's by itself, right? Because you always have to discard that card at the end. But if you have 2 shrines, now all of a sudden you're up a card, and you get to pick the best card out of the 2
yeah.
that you draw before you discard. Actually, you get to discard a card, so it doesn't even have to be one of the cards you drew.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, of course, the card draw ones are going to be some of the better ones. I mean, that's not hard to guess. Sanctum of Fruitful Harvest is the green one, 2 and a green. And it says, at the beginning of your pre-combat main phase... add X of any one color, where X is the number of shrines you control.
Oh.
So this is a mana rock, kind of. You don't tap it or anything. It just adds the mana. A little bit worse than mana rock, right? Because I can't hold this mana up on Jimmy's turn or something.
Yes.
But still, the
you
fact
get it main
that
phase.
You get it main phase. And the fact that it can be more than 1 mana, right? We're used to paying 3 mana. If you pay 3 mana for a mana rock, besides Worn Power Stone and Coalition Relic, everything else just basically only gives you 1 mana.
At that point, yeah.
I think so. I think that's a correct statement. And this can give you 2, 3, 4 if you really get the shrine thing going.
Yeah.
If you're getting 3 mana off it, that's kind of nuts. It's Gilded Lotus at that point.
Yeah, and it, you know, it'll pay for itself at just 3 mana as well.
Mm-hmm.
Sanctum of Stone Fangs is the black one. It's 1 in the black. At the beginning of your pre-combat main phase, each opponent loses X life, and you gain X life, where X is the number of shrines you control. Okay, all right, so it's a bit of an aristocratic type effect. Again, this one is not as impressive when you have so many other cards in black that do the same thing. However, this is something that will happen every single pre-combat main phase on your turn. And if you have Sanctum of All out, that means it's happening multiple times.
Yeah, if you don't, you have to control
6 or more shrines.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing about this one is, it's like you said, for the white one is 1 mana, and this one's 2 mana. And what you want to do is have a lot of shrines out, so you don't, you know, you need some cheap ones, even if they don't do much, to just count as a shrine.
Mm-hmm.
Because if then you, the next turn you cast the green one and you get 2 extra mana, you know, the next turn, that's a lot better than 1 extra mana, obviously, and it starts to to snowball. The red one is the last one here, Sanctum of Shattered Heights, 2 in red, legendary enchantment shrine. You can pay 1 and discard a land card or a shrine card. And then Sanctum of Shattered Heights deals X damage to target creature or planeswalker, where X is the number of, you guessed it, shrines you control. So that's a direct damage spell to only creatures and planeswalkers, can't hit players, that allows you to, I mean, you're going to discard land cards, right? You're not discarding shrine cards, probably.
The only reason you would discard the shrine card would be before your upkeep with the Sanctum of All on the battlefield, and then you could fetch it from the graveyard to the battlefield.
Oh, that's interesting. Or if you had, assuming it's a shrine deck, and it's very hard to build a deck that's like, I'm a little bit concerned about shrines. You're either all in on shrines or you're not doing shrines, right?
Yeah, this is 11 cards out of your deck right now, and which is like, you know, a fifth of your deck right there.
So maybe you have cards that get just get enchantments back from your graveyard and things like that too. So I guess I could see that.
Replenish type things.
Yeah, it's too bad you have to lose the card. So Sanctum of Shattered Heights doesn't give you card advantage in any way here. Yeah. It's just you turn cards in your hand into lightning bolts and stuff, kind of, right?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I'm not super impressed with all of the new shrines. I think some of them are much better. Obviously, the green and blue ones. Who would have guessed it?
The green and blue ones that are good.
Who would have flunked it? So let's take a look at the original Hondins. There's a Hondin of Cleansing Fire. We'll just go through these quickly. 3 and a white. At the beginning of your upkeep, you gain 2 life for each shrine you control. The red one is Infinite Rage. It deals damage to target creature or player equal to the number of shrines you control at the beginning of your upkeep. The green one, again, at the beginning of your upkeep, you put a 1/1 colorless spirit creature token for each shrine you control. The black one, your opponent discards a card for each shrine you control. Now, that is actually pretty vicious, because you can get someone discarding up to, I guess, 11 cards.
You have 11 shrines, you just
won.
Yeah,
you're already winning. The Haunting of Seeing Winds is drawing a card for each shrine you control. And I think this one's actually worse than Calm Waters, because this costs 5 mana. And whereas Calm Waters, you're only discarding one, but it seems like you can get it out earlier.
Yeah.
And then that is, I think,
it. Yeah, that's all 5 of them.
Yeah, so
those ones, like we said, they all trigger on the upkeep. Mm-hmm. And because in a shrine deck, we are assuming you're going to put the Hondins and the Sanctums all in there because you're going to want just the highest density of shrines that you can get.
Right.
If someday in the future they make 5 more shrines, you're going to put those shrines in because it'll be a long time until there's too many shrines where you're going, I don't need this one.
I can cut one now.
Yeah.
Yeah. You want to be playing a shrine every turn if you're this deck, I think.
Yeah. So anyway, because the upkeep is so important for the other 5 shrines, I think one of the cards that you definitely want in the deck is
Paradox Haze.
This is a cool card.
Yeah, it's a card that you played in your Joyra deck. Yeah, it's 2 and a blue for an enchantment. You can enchant player. At the beginning of enchant player's first upkeep each turn, that player gets an additional upkeep step this turn this step.
So you get 2 upkeeps. So any upkeep triggers you get, you just get them twice. Really cool with the shrines. Yeah, it was the old school Joyra with the suspend counters, not the new Joyra.
Right, and if you have Sanctum of All and 6 shrines, you're getting 4 triggers total because it's going to trigger twice and then that times 2 for Sanctum of All. So it could be great.
Like that's game winning.
Look, we're just in magical Christmas land for this entire conversation. You need to have so much for even this, like, maybe let's just move on. Let's you know.
No,
like,
wait. No, I want to talk about the shrine deck for a second.
Okay, fine.
I think the best commander for the shrine deck is Sisay, Weatherlight Captain. What do you think?
Yeah, I think Gigantha, the Wellspring, also kind of might have a place there just because you can tap it to cast the Sanctum of All. But
it gives you Wooburg, yeah.
Yeah, Sisay is pretty strong here, I think, just because, again, you're looking for legendary permanence.
Right, so, and because you only have 11 shrines in the deck, you're going to really want to guarantee that you can go find them.
Yeah.
And so Sisay definitely helps you tutor up the shrines that you need. So I think that's a good, that's probably the commander you want to go with, just so you guaranteed can do the thing your deck's built to do, which is put shrines out. Well, it's easy with if there's only 11 in the deck that you just only draw one in the whole game.
Yeah.
In which case, your deck should just be like, it's not doing much.
Yeah, you want to find ways to tutor it out. Obviously, in white, you have Idyllic Tutor in a lot of those cards as well. Sisay seems like a pretty good fit here, as long as you're able to tutor it out. Now, again, it is a pretty mana-intensive deck, so it's a ton of ramp.
It's 5 color, though.
Yeah, you wrote a lot of Enchantress pieces to keep your engine going and just drawing cards regardless. I think that's right as well. The kind of thing that this deck wants, though, is a real win condition, because just having all the shrines out is a lot of value, but you got to find a way to end the game, right?
Like, it's true, actually. You're going to make mana, draw cards, tap down their permanence, make some tokens with the old one, draw more cards, gain life. Oh, crap. Which one wins the game?
It's the black one, the Stone Fangs, right?
So they just wait, exile the black one, and be like, okay, what else you got? And you're like, crap, I'm making mana, drawing cards, tapping down. Dang it.
I've just decked myself. Whoops.
Use Starfield of Nyx and turn them into creatures and just do what an Enchantress deck does, I guess.
I think these kinds of decks are definitely fun, and they're very easy to build because these cards are not prohibitively expensive.
Right.
And they're all uncommons for the most part, except for Sanctum of All. So, I mean, it's cool to see this. I think these are good and limited, obviously. And you don't forget, when you just have one shrine out, you're getting at least that one trigger.
Yeah. It's going to be a middle power deck too, which is like, a lot of people ask us all the time, well, how do I build? I only build like 8s and 9s and 10s. How do I build? Well, sometimes choosing a theme like, hey, I'm going to build a shrine deck will just naturally keep your power down so you can maybe play with your play group if they play mostly 6s or whatever. So, yeah. All right. I just threw a lot of shade at the shrines.
I mean,
no, I still got to build a saga deck. Can I build a saga and shrine deck at this? No. No, they want totally different things. One wants to like proliferate and mess with counters and stuff, and these want to just
get out on
and then Enchantress, basically, right?
Yeah, at least you have enchantment. Maybe it's just an enchantment matters 5 color deck. Put in your favorite things.
Sure.
All right.
Let's talk about the new planeswalkers in this set. So it's a core set. There are five new planeswalkers, one in each color.
Yeah. Very exciting. There's a new planeswalker on the battlefield now. And
oh, yeah. This is the first time we've ever met this character.
Yeah. I believe they're from Amon Khet, and it is Basri Khet. Like Amon Khet, actually. Interesting. It's one white for a legendary planeswalker, Basri. So it's a three-man planeswalker, comes in with three loyalty. Plus one, you can put a +1/+1 counter on up to one target creature, and it gains indestructible until end of turn.
Okay.
Minus two, whenever one or more non-token creatures attack this turn, create that many 1/1 white soldier creature tokens that are tapped and attacking. And at minus six, you get an emblem with, at the beginning of combat on your turn, create a 1/1 white soldier creature token, then put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control. So this is sort of like the inevitability clause. You just get to minus six and you're making a bunch of tokens. This is, I'd say, right in the middle of power level. It's sort of what you come to expect for planeswalkers that are white. They buff up some creatures. Maybe they make them harder to kill. +1/+1 counters matters. It's not terribly impressive, but I think the rate for a three-mana planeswalker that at the very least can make something bigger is not the worst. Typically, we want to make tokens. The minus two, though, more interesting here.
It does make tokens, but it's contingent upon you attacking with a bunch of creatures, which, you know, does happen in games, but I don't know how often are you really swinging with more than two creatures, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times I think your best case scenario, your most realistic scenario for this is play it, negative two, attack, get two 1/1s, and now Basri's at one loyalty and probably going to die.
Yeah, you better hope too that those 1/1s can go somewhere that they're not going to get blocked and just immediately dead, because they're 1/1s, and they have to be entering the battlefield tapped and attacking as well.
That's a really good point. And you're not doing that on turn three because what'd you do? Well, I guess you went one drop, two drop, but that's pretty rare, right? A restack or something maybe can do that, but probably you're playing this on turn four at the earliest because you went two drop, three drop, and then
you want more attackers.
Somebody's got people have blockers. Maybe you got one player with no blockers and you can get through. I don't know.
This could be a win.
But if you tap out, right? Like Bastard is just sitting there at one loyalty and you tapped out because you want to attack with everything to make as many soldiers as possible, so you have no blockers.
Yeah.
So it just dies. So is three mana make two 1/1s any good?
I like this later on in the game. If you're just a token matters deck, you want to attack, it's turn 7 or 8, you have a whole army of little guys, but you can't get through for the damage. You play Basri, maybe some sort of pump spell on top, attack, use his ability, and boom, you got tons of creatures out.
But if that's the case, then I might as well just play Elspeth because it's late enough in the game that I could cast her, right? And she's just way better.
Yeah, she could board wipe, she can do a lot more stuff.
Yeah, unless you can use the +1/+1 counter on a creature and make it indestructible, unless that's somehow useful to you, I don't know how much I like Basri.
Yeah, and usually when we look up the cards for these that synergize with them, you can tell their power level based on what the cards are that work well. So I was like, Anna Fens of the Foremost. It's a creature that when it attacks, you put some +1/+1 counters on another trapped creature you control. It's like, cool, it's +1/+1 matters, maybe some tokens, but it's not like, wow, these two cards together, woo, it's crazy.
It's just like, that might work.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, maybe a Najeela the Blade Blossom deck where you want to create tons of low tokens that are tapped and attacking, this makes more, so Basri can, you know, but then it's like, wait, this is non-token creatures attacking, so, you know, it's hard to find the things that work great with this. My favorite might just be a mono-white Audric deck. Because you get indestructible on the creature, and then boom, Audric is going to be able to...
All your stuff has indestructible.
Right.
So you do like that part of it. And also, if you just happen to have a lot of creatures, and you've already got flying and other stuff going on, then now the tokens matter a little more.
Yeah.
Audric's pretty good home for this. I thought Winota's okay, even though, remember, the creatures enter tapped and attacking the tokens, so they won't trigger a Winota on that first turn, but if any of them survive on the next turn... Then you can get the trigger. I don't know. I'm reaching here. I'm stretching a
little. Yeah. Well, I mean, we got to reach in general when it comes to mono white and mono red. The cool thing about Basri and Winota is that he makes white soldier tokens. And Winota says non-human. So there's a little, even though the soldiers could be humans, they're actually soldiers first, humans second.
They're not humans necessarily. They could be Minotaur soldiers. So they're just straight up not humans.
Yeah, they're just soldiers.
So it works. Soldiers.
And assemble the Legion. You know, if you're just playing straight, let's make a lot of creatures attacking type thing with your Tajik deck or whatever it might be, Basri could find a place there.
All right, Basri, pretty lackluster, I'd say.
Yeah. I mean, when you're comparing it to Elspeth.
I mean, you're never going to... Elspeth's one of the best planeswalkers ever made. So,
yeah.
But even comparing it to a mid-tier, middle-of-the-line Planeswalker. I can't think of an example off the top of my head. I think it's still lackluster.
It's a bit tougher too to put Bozriquet in a standard legal set and make him super overpowered because Elspeth like warped the standard format right. when it hits.
So. Oh yeah, I don't want them to make another Elspeth. I'm just saying like, yeah, that's the power level we're sort of looking at as a threshold for will we play it. And I don't think Bazzery is just going to see much play.
Nope. Sorry, Bazzery. You are cool though. You seem like a cool dude.
All right. The next one is Chandra, Heart of Fire. 3 red for a 5 loyalty planeswalker. So 5 mana for 5 loyalty. Her plus one is discard your hand, then exile the top 3 cards of your library. Until end of turn, you may play cards exiled this way. Plus one, Chandra, Heart of Fire deals 2 damage to any target.
Oh, 2 plus 1s though. No minus one here.
That's cool. -9, search your graveyard and library for any number of red instant and or sorcery cards. Exile them, then shuffle your library. You may cast them this turn. Add 6 red to your mana pool.
Okay, so that's interesting. Now you're talking 5 loyalty. That means doubling season is a potential here to get you up to 10. You immediately -9. You're already winning the game at that point. Maybe there are planeswalkers to play. The problem with this being costing 5 mana is that when you play it, yeah, your hand may be close to empty, but if you discard your hand and exile the top cards, do you have mana left at that point?
Yeah, you just spent 5 on Chandra. I don't think you're doing that ever. So you're basically saying, I'm going to play this 5 mana planeswalker. I'm going to shock something.
Mm-hmm.
She'll go to 6. I'm going to hope that shock does anything in a game of Commander once there's 5 mana. Like, okay, kill an Oracle of Moldiah, sure. But it feels like she's immediately going to get attacked and die.
Yeah.
And then, yeah... Why can't you discard your hand and then draw 3 cards? Because it's a real downside to... Like, it's not as good. We often equate this to drawing cards, and it is similar, but it's not the same.
Right.
When you exile the top cards of your library and then play them this turn, it's definitely not as good as drawing the cards, right? Because...
Can't hold up an instant on someone else's turn.
What if 2 of them are lands? You can only play 1 land.
Yeah.
What if they're 2 high CMC spells? You can't cast both of them, right? There's a whole bunch of downsides to this, and I don't think it would have been broken to say discard your hand, draw 3 cards.
Yeah, and previous Chandra's
zero or something
have done that, right?
Yeah.
And like Wheel of Fortune shows that red can do this kind of thing.
So the fact that it's like Wheel of Impulsive Draw, so I don't know why to nerf it. I guess because it's a +1 and not a -, or something.
Is that some new game show I haven't seen yet? Welcome to Wheel of Impulsive Draw. We're going to mention this card probably 8 times in these next set reviews, but Riel the Everwise is my favorite commander to sort of have Chandra there, because you're going to discard your hand, and if it's like 3 or 4 cards, then booyah, you're going to draw some with Riel. So
yeah, do you want to read Riel? Because she is kind of new.
She is going to be around as well. It's 1 blue and a red for a legendary creature human wizard, a 0/3. Gets +1/+0 for each instant and sorcery card in your graveyard. And whenever you discard 1 or more cards for the first time each turn, draw that many cards. So
you can discard your hand, draw that many cards, and then also do the impulsive draw thing.
Yeah.
So you'll do the impulsive draw, then draw that many cards because you have to resolve that ability. Anyway, you get what I'm saying. You just got to keep the cards. Yeah, I would say in a Riel deck, maybe Chandra is good enough. Although the Wheel decks they're not having trouble finding that effect. So I don't think they need like a bad version of it, right?
Yeah, and Chandra, if you just look at her, for 5 mana, +1, deal 2 damage to any target. 5 mana's a lot, you know, and again, Corset can't push the power level too crazily.
We're going to get to one where they push the hell out of it. So.
Yeah, I know.
So they can do it for other colors, but
just not our good old white and red friends over here. Sorry.
Yeah, doubling season is a thing with Chandra. I think it's less likely you're going to build that deck just because you're going to be in green then. And are you going to build an instance and sorcery matters mm-hmm. deck? She can only get the red instance and sorceries out of there too. It's limiting. It's not like you doubling season Chandra ultimate win. There are planeswalkers that do that, and if that's what you want to do, I don't think Chandra fits that bill either. It's just another planeswalker we're going to talk about and we'll probably never mention again on the show.
Yeah, I doubt I'll really see this as well, but this is the sort of thing that this is like kind of the Corset mentality. It's like, I opened it in a booster, I'm going to slot it into some fun deck.
Yeah, it'll do some stuff
and eventually you might find that you'll replace it. Planeswalkers already bring such an inherent risk with them and they draw so much attention towards you. Her going up to 6 on the first turn you play her is a bit tough to deal with, because that's a lot, right? So 6 is a decent amount. But otherwise, not terribly impressed. Chandra's had a lot of iterations over the years, though, so it's not like I'm terribly like...
Yeah, it's not like, oh no, we can't play a Chandra. There's a bunch that are playable.
Yeah.
Also, Planeswalkers as a card type, I don't know about you, but they're slightly annoying to play against, so I don't want them to make a bunch of busted Planeswalkers. We get Ugin back here. That's going to be enough to deal with for a little while. I'm okay.
Yeah.
And there's going to be another one we're going to talk about in a second here, which I think is going to be real.
Yeah.
A real player.
I'm glad that these are within the 4 to 6 range. I think power level-wise, that's a great place to put Planeswalkers without just making all of us go, no, why? Which, again, we'll be doing here in a second.
All right, let's talk about the green one. It's Garruk or Garruk.
Rook.
I'm not sure which is correct. There seems to be some contention in the Magic world because every time I listen to content, they pronounce it differently. Garruk or Garruk, I don't really care. It's a made-up name, so I'm just going to say Garruk. I'm sorry.
He's unleashed, though, this time.
Yeah, Garruk unleashed. 2 green-green for a 4 loyalty planeswalker. +1, up to 1 target creature gets +3/+3, and gains trample until end of turn.
Kind of like Basri, in a way.
Yep. -3, you create a 3/3 green beast creature token. Then, if an opponent controls more creatures than you, you put a loyalty counter back on Garruk.
Oh, so it's a -1, not a -2 then.
If you have less creatures than somebody.
Right.
And -7, the ultimate, you get an emblem with, at the beginning of your end step, you may search your library for a creature card, put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. So every end step, you have an emblem that says every end step, tutor a creature onto the battlefield. That'll win you the game pretty fast.
Yeah, and this again, coming at 4, this is a doubling season target. It'll go up to 8 and you -7 it. This one is definitely much better than Basri.
Yep. Better than Chandra.
It makes its own blocker, which is again one of the most important things, and it might do it at a discounted cost as well.
I'd say there's a good chance if you play it on 4, right? Because on your turn 4, you're not playing a creature.
Right.
I guess it has to be less than, though. It can't be equal to.
But green loves to, like, ramp stuff out. So, boom, you're playing a mana dork on turns 1 and 2. Here comes Garruk. You have definitely more creatures than everyone else.
True. But then at that point, you're like, all right, -2. He's at 2. Next turn, I'll +1 it, maybe give a trample. Or
yeah. Or just +1/+1 of the creatures, wait for other players to play more, then you -2. So, I can see this as a planeswalker that actually sticks around quite annoyingly.
Yeah, and just gets you some value. And trample is a thing green decks just generally want. So, oftentimes, you're like, if I could just get through with this one creature, I will knock that person out of the game.
Yeah.
And Garruk can do that, right? It's not the super efficient way to do it, but play it, give something +3/+3 and trample. I mean, that's the kind of play that Craig will make against you and kill you with.
That's true.
You think you're fine, and then boom, Craig's like, kill you. And you're oh, crap, you gave a trample. I didn't think about that.
Yeah. So I think, again, very much in aggressive decks, this is cool. If you're playing Garruk Cursed Huntsman, which was the Throne of Eldraine one, you can make these little black, green, and wolf creature tokens, and when they die, you put a loyalty counter on each Garruk you control. So maybe you can find a way to get them to that -7 faster, because that definitely is a big game winner.
Garruk Tribal. Play Wildspeaker. That's a good one. There's a bunch of good Garrucks, so that's a good... I like that.
Yeah, untap a lot of lands, play a bunch of Garrucks, and it's just Garruk.deck.
I thought Xenagos, God of Revels, is pretty good. Tends to have less creatures, but they're all huge, and giving them trample is a thing that you want to do because Xenagos doubles their power, but doesn't give them trample. So a lot of times, +3/+3 and trample, then Xenagos doubles that, whatever they're at now. So they're like a 16/16 trample now, which is tends to be a lot better than a 16/16 with not trample.
Okay, power ranking-wise, it's in the order that we said. Garruk is definitely the most powerful of the 3 we've mentioned so far.
Not going to remain that way, though.
No.
But more powerful than this next one.
Oh, definitely. Liliana, Waker of the Dead. I almost thought it was Walker of the Dead, and she was like, kind of like that character in Walking Dead, or she has a walker.
Has a walker.
It's like, yeah, it's like old Liliana now. It's 2 black.
She's a plains walker.
If it just said Liliana Plains Waker of the Dead, I would be so stoked to be like, you guys did it. We have jumped the shark, or I guess jumped the tombstone in her case. 2 black for a 4 loyalty planeswalker. Actually, that's on theme so far. Each of the loyalties comes in at the same amount of the mana cost for the planeswalker so far.
I didn't even notice that.
Except for this last one.
Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. +1, each player discards a card. Each opponent who can't loses 3 life. -3, target creature gets -X/-X until end of turn, where X is the number of cards in your graveyard. And -7, you get an emblem with, at the beginning of the combat on your turn, put target creature card from a graveyard onto the battlefield under control. It gains haste. So any graveyard, any battlefield. Again, she comes in at 4. This is -7, so this is another doubling season potential.
She doesn't protect her. Well, she can remove a creature depending on if you've done some work up till then.
Yeah. But in multiplayer, you gotta protect her quite a bit.
Yeah, I think you need to want people to be discarding cards. If your deck has Waste Knot in it, then that's a potential deck that this card might be good in, because you care about the discard.
Mm-hmm.
Waste Not is the enchantment that whenever your opponents discard cards, depending on what the card is, you get an effect. You like get like zombies. Yeah, you
add mana, yeah. Draw some cards.
So if
make everyone angry at you,
yeah, that's true. it is each player, right?
Yeah.
So also you're discarding cards. So something like Bone Miser is a card that
it's like a fair Liliana of the Veil, because that's 3 mana to get one out that makes everyone discard cards.
Yeah, it's yeah.
This is 4 mana instead.
It's not horrible because it will do some stuff, and especially if you play it onto a board with you know where. It's not going to die immediately.
Mm-hmm.
If you plus it like 3 times in a game, that could be devastating to your opponent. So just losing so many cards. And if presumably your deck either is going to play around with its graveyard, so it doesn't care if it's discarding, or actually actively wants to discard because you're getting positive effects off of it. You know, eh.
The -X gets around Indestructible, gets around a lot of creatures that can't get removed otherwise. So that's nice there too.
Yeah. I think it's fine. I it's not groundbreaking or anything, but
yeah.
You know, it'll probably see a little play.
I hope I open it in limited.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be real good in limited.
Almost always good.
It's got removal on it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this next one is the one. This card's a little bit nuts. Might be my pick for best card in the set. It's Teferi, Master of Time.
Oh, yeah. Just because it introduces, you know, an effect that kind of breaks the multiplayer.
It's nuts. Yeah. It's just not templated well for multiplayer. It's 2 blue-blue for a 3 mana. Or sorry. 2 blue-blue for a 3 loyalty planeswalker. Mm-hmm. It has a static ability similar to the War of the Spark Planeswalkers. So it says, you may activate loyalty abilities of Teferi, Master of Time, on any player's turn, anytime you could cast an instant.
I'm doing that meme where the guy blinks and is surprised. It's like, what?
So this means that all of Teferi's abilities can be activated on everybody's turns, provided you have the correct amount of loyalty, including your own. So keep that in mind as we read this. So +1 is draw a card, then discard a card. Loot. So loot. But think of how good that is if nothing else was on the card, right? I play Teferi, I loot on my turn, he goes up to 4 loyalty. Goes to Jimmy's turn, I loot on Jimmy's turn. He goes
You did what? You're allowed to do that?
I'm allowed to do it.
Oh.
Goes up to 5 loyalty. Mel's turn, I loot. 6 loyalty. Ashlyn's turn, I loot. 7 loyalty, comes back to my turn.
Loot.
8 loyalty. Okay. Negative, but he has more than just the one ability.
Actually, if you just stopped right there,
it's a good
better
card.
Than all of the planeswalkers we talked about. Sorry.
All right, -3. Target creature you don't control phases out.
Hmm.
Phasing is back. I guess Teferi's
protection. Right. Yeah, yeah.
So what phasing is you treat the card... you treat it and anything attached to it as though they don't exist until its controller's next turn, but doesn't actually leave the battlefield and come back. So there's no, you don't re-trigger enter the battlefields, or you don't get a leave the battlefield trigger, mm-hmm. or whatever, but the card just doesn't exist. So it won't see anything and trigger off of anything. It can't interact with anything. Nothing can target it or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. It's like a weird form of removal, but it's an interesting one. And then at, right before their untapped step, it comes back in, so it doesn't have summoning sickness and it untaps. And then there's a -10 on Teferi, which is time stretch. Take 2 extra turns after this one. So it even has the win con on it.
Yeah.
Like, as you're slowly ticking it up on everybody's turn, it's going to get to 10 in 2 rotations, right?
Yeah.
Because it's 4 per rotation, comes in with 3, so it's just boom, 11, whatever. And you can even activate it, the extra turns, on your opponent's turn.
Oh, right.
Because it's just a loyalty ability. It doesn't say only activate the +1.
Yeah.
And that's another thing about the phasing thing, the phase out thing. It's an instant speed removal spell because
you can do it at instant speed.
And because you plus it on your turn, it goes to Jimmy's turn, I have 4 loyalty. It protects itself now because it can even wait till you attack it.
Yeah.
And then go, okay, I'll phase that thing out and save my Teferi. And
then the next turn, you plus it up again, so it gets a little harder to kill.
This card is bonkers.
Yeah, it really is. Well, I mean, just like looking at the power level compared to the other planeswalkers, I don't even think you could put the like 2 of these planeswalkers together on a single card and get close to what Teferi's doing here. He's breaking the rules of planeswalkers by doing the thing that I was like, wait, why can't you do this at instant speed when I first saw a planeswalker? Yeah. And here we are. So,
and the fact that it scales with, so if you're playing with 6 players, you suddenly would have,
oh gosh,
additional 2 times. Like, I don't love that. I mean, listen, I love me a Seaborn Muse,
mm-hmm.
but I don't want every card. I don't want a lot of that effect because it's just a lot of things happening during other play people's turns that tends to like drag out the game. And yeah. I think this is the same thing. And especially since, well, I've got two different options of what I can do. So true. During other people's turn, I kind of got to think a little bit. Yeah, it's very powerful though. Let's talk about some of the cards that kind of go along with it.
The big one that everyone's talking about is Oath of Teferi. Basically, if it says Teferi in it, it probably works well with them. It's 3BB for a legendary enchantment. When Oath of Teferi enters the battlefield, exile another target permanent you control, return it to the battlefield under its owner's control at the beginning of the next end step. Oh no, you don't want to do this to your planeswalkers because then they're not going to be able to use it the turn that they come down.
Except.
Uh-huh. So next end step means you can again, like you. Let's say you play Teferi, and you minus or you plus one it, go to your, and you play this or whatever, exiles it, comes back, you can use it, and then it goes to the next turn, you can use it again.
Yep.
But the more important one is you may activate the loyalty ability to the planeswalkers you control twice each turn rather than only once. Used to be whatever, now it's insane.
Yeah, because twice on my turn, twice on your turn, twice on Mel's turn, take two extra turns, right? Like, it's yeah. just kind of like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't really have much else to say other than, yeah, that's a card, and this is a combo, and this is just nuts.
Yep. Teferi, pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, if you're playing Nicol Bolas Dragon God, now he has looting abilities as well as the phasing abilities.
And the ability to activate on other players' turns, right?
No, it's unfortunately, only activated abilities, yeah. But Nicol Bolas is, I mean, Lil Love's a good friend here. A lot of people said that Pyr, Imaginative Rascal, is quite powerful with this card.
Because it gets the extra... loyalty yeah. counter.
It says with one or more counters we put on a permanent your team controls, that many plus one of each of those kinds of counters are put on that permanent instead. So now it's Teferi on 3 plus one is actually plus 2.
So go to 5.
Next turn 7, 9, 11.
On your turn take two extra turns. Yeah. And have loyalty ability left over.
Yeah, and Pyr curves into Teferi because it's a 3 mana card as well.
If you ever get Pyr and Oath of Teferi out, is that just infinite right there?
Let's see. Well, you go...
It's four per?
Four, yeah. So you get plus two. I mean, you just can control the whole table with a single planeswalker, which I think is pretty nuts.
Yeah.
Because you can threaten the minus three at any time. And we'll talk a little bit about that in a second. Riel the Everwise again makes an appearance here. You're putting stuff in the graveyard.
Yeah, you're looting.
You're looting, yeah.
So draw two cards everybody's turn. That's good.
Jeez, yeah. Scarab God, because you want to put stuff into the graveyard as well.
Yeah, Boldrotha.
Yeah.
Anything that is playing around with its graveyard, Teferi's just going to be good because the looting's good.
Turns out there are madness cards as well in blue that I didn't realize, which gets better when you can madness at instant speed with Teferi. Circular Logic, you can cast it for a blue to counter target spell unless it's control. It pays one for each card in your graveyard.
Oh, that's brutal.
And then I never knew this card existed, but Obsessive Search, it's a blue for an instant that you can madness for blue just to draw a card. So, you know, just a little extra value from your Teferi.
Yeah, you put madness card. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So... this card's ridiculous. I wanted to talk about the phase out portion of it because I actually think that's quite powerful.
Yeah.
Because decks are not equipped to handle that kind of removal, right? So Indestructible, don't care. Phase the thing out. Think of all the really powerful commanders that this stops in its tracks. The Timna decks, Najeela decks,
right.
The Gitrog decks. Because you can actually, before combat, phase the thing out. Gitrog, in response, you know, a lot of Gitrog decks, what they do, they go to the discard phase, they have 8 cards, they go, oh, I got to discard, I'll discard a land, that draws me a card, I'll discard a land, that draws me a card, I still have 8, I got to do that again, I'll yeah. do that a million times, blah, 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 blah. In response to the triggers, you can be like, okay, phase Gitrog out, let's not do that.
Yeah, oh gosh.
So there's just so many ways that this card interacts strongly and gives you the flexibility and the options to take advantage of whatever the situation affords you because, you know, nobody plays a creature early. Well, I'm just going to plus. Oh, somebody can threaten it. Okay, I'm going to phase it out.
Yeah.
I also think there's a political aspect to it too, right? Let's say somebody is playing that Timna. I would be like, hey, I can keep that Timna under control because I can just loot, phase it out. Loot, phase it out. So you guys just don't hit my planeswalker and I'll keep the Timna under control, you know? But meanwhile, you're just looting three. Looting is so good. Jimmy, we said if this card just said 4 mana, loot 4 times, it would be pretty good.
Yeah.
And this is even better because looting gets better when it's spread out like this. Because I loot on my turn and looting.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
And looting is like, I'm going to look at my cards. What's the board look like? I don't need this card right now. Then I get more information on your turn, so I loot again. And I go, well, this card I thought I would need. I don't actually, so I'll pitch that. And so spreading it out over time actually makes the looting more effective than if you just looted 4 times all at once. Yeah,
you're in colors that care about your graveyard. You have decks that love graveyard stuff like Muldrotha. You are able to stop other things in their path. Teferi, Master of Time.
It's 4 mana. I think this thing could have been 6 mana and still been very good.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Without a doubt. The fact that it comes out as early as turn 2, you know, that's...
If you Sol Ring, yeah.
Yeah, if you have Sol Ring, boom, turn 2 Teferi. Who's going to have creatures that really can attack this at that point?
If you play a turn 2 Teferi... Presumably, no one can attack it, right? So you're just at 7 loyalty.
Yeah, everyone's playing Mana Rocks or doing whatever else.
And if you could just play a blocker, you're probably going to get to
11
loyalty. And then you just take 2 turns on turn 5. Like, that's probably going to be enough to win you the game. Because it'll still have 1 loyalty left over when you do that, right?
Yeah, and you get 2 more turns to jump it back up. And then at that point, you can get your peers out. You can do so much. This card, again... We're probably just hammering on it way too hard now, but it is nuts. It really is nuts.
I think it's a staple blue card now. Not on the level of Cyclonic Rift, but I think you could put this in any deck with blue, and with no synergies going on, it'll be a good card in your deck.
Yeah.
In the way that Cyclonic Rift is. Now, obviously, it's going to get better with synergies, but I think this is a card that's powerful enough. It's Smothering Tithe powerful, where... You don't have to like think, what else is my deck doing? You just go, do I own this card? Is this deck blue? You could play this card. I'm not saying you always have to.
But you could definitely just play it. And it's just going to be good.
Yeah, and it probably will be better than most other cards you could put in.
I mean, how many mono blue cards have the ability to either say loot 4 times a turn cycle or loot twice and phase out a problematic creature?
Yeah, loot and remove something. Loot a couple times and remove something. Also, it gains you life if they attack it, which they'll probably have to get rid of it.
Yeah. This is definitely one of those remove on site cards as well, because the advantage you accrue from it is just so massive. Even if it's just 4 mana loot twice, that's not the worst rate in the world. You wouldn't be unhappy, and then people are expending resources to try and get rid of it constantly. So there's a lot of value here. Teferi, Master of Time. It's masterful. It's nuts.
Get used to it. I think we're going to see it a lot.
Yeah.
It's just going to be one of those cards that people will play in blue decks now, and it's going to be a Smothering Tithe level. You just get used to seeing it. You're not going to have to read this card. You're going to know what it does after
a while. Time to pack some more Planeswalker removal, I suppose.
Maybe. Maybe we just got to play more lower drops so we can swing at stuff.
I mean, we already are, but sometimes your decks need to just play 2 mana rocks, because if you're mono red, you don't really have the liberty of being like, I'm going to play all my Birds of Paradise.
Yeah, that's true. All right, we are going to get in a couple of colors here, the cards from green, the cards from white. There's actually quite a few, but before we continue with the set review, we're going to take a quick break and hear a message from our sponsors.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now, all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish, or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
All right, friends, we are back and prepare to not see any cards that are on the power level of the card we just talked about for the rest of the episode.
Maybe. There's some good ones, though.
There are some good ones, actually.
There might not be another card as powerful as Teferi for the rest of this set review and maybe the next couple sets. That's a powerful card.
Maybe the next couple. I mean, we haven't seen a Planeswalker this powerful for... What's the last Planeswalker that matched up to Teferi?
Ugin? Elspeth? It's on that level.
Yeah, Ugin, and that came out years ago at this point.
I mean, I think Ugin and Elspeth are probably the top 2 Planeswalkers in the format.
Yeah.
And I'd put Teferi, like, with them pretty close. We haven't seen it in play yet, so hopefully Maybe that's something we're not thinking of.
I feel like I've played enough Commander and talked about enough to know just how problematic this thing could be.
All right, let's move on to the green cards in the set here. We've got a number of them to talk about. This first one's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a beast. It's 3 green green for a 6/6. And I meant beast as in it's beastly. It also is a beast. It's the Elder Gargaroth. It has vigilance, reach, and trample. And whenever Elder Gargaroth attacks or blocks, choose one. Create a 3/3 green beast creature token. You gain 3 life. Draw a card. Wow.
There is a lot of text on that card. It's doing a lot of things.
Yeah, so it's got vigilance, so and reach and trample. So this is just one of the best blockers and attackers you can put on the battlefield. 5 mana for a 6/6 already. It's on a good rate. And then you can either make more tokens, draw cards, and occasionally gain life, which we've seen can be really relevant.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention you're putting up a blocker. It's really hard to attack you now, because when it blocks, you're also going to gain more life or make more tokens or draw a card. Bah!
Yeah. It's actually, you get your money's worth for this card. Now, there is some downsides. Obviously, it's a 5-mana creature that doesn't enter the battlefield and do anything.
Right. So if they it doesn't have haste either.
Yeah. So if they remove it right away, you get nothing for it. I think that aspect is overblown. I think, you know, as we learned from our stats episode recently, I don't think people are removing creatures as often as we think they are.
They're only removing the ones that say, if you don't, you're going to lose.
Or it's your commander or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Creatures do kind of stick around longer. We know that attacks happen more often than we thought. I think the Gargaroth is actually pretty good. And if it swings a couple of times, like, it's pretty good value.
If it blocks a couple of times?
Well, let's say it's a creature that swings, draws you a couple cards, or makes a token and draws a card, but also has the other upside of they didn't attack you during that time because they didn't want you to get this upside. Like, that's worth something. There's quite a bit of value in 3 other players just don't come at you because I don't want them to draw the card. I don't want them to make a token.
Yeah, and you're just gaining life by not being attacked.
Yep.
So I think this card's really powerful. I think a Ryami First of the Fallen deck is going to love this because look at all of the keywords on this thing. It's keyword soup.
Cathedral too, because that's also a keyword ability counters deck. Yep.
Let's hit up Proggy Boog because you could throw this into the pile for the Mael the Anima deck.
Oh, yeah.
Who allows you to look at the top 5 cards of your deck. You can put a creature with power 5 or greater with among them from on the battlefield. So Utter Gargaroth can come out at instant speed now. Pretty scary.
Yep.
I like Tristani Selesnya's voice because 1, gaining a bunch of life, but 2, whenever another creature enters the battlefield, you gain life equal to that creature's toughness. Elder Gargaroth can now do a great job of gaining life. A 3 life, by the way. It can kind of like activate 2 of its abilities whenever it attacks or blocks. And you gain the 3 life because of Tristani, and you can also draw a card. And then you can populate with Tristani as well to make even more of your low green beast creature tokens.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a lot there.
It synergizes with a few different aspects of it. I like that.
Yeah. Miri Weatherlight Duelist. Again, like, as long as Miri is tapped, no more than 1 creature can attack you each combat. You just put up the best blocker of all time. Ugh. And if you attack with Miri and the Elder Gargaroth, they can't block with more than 1 creature this combat, so the Gargaroth is very likely to not die.
You'll definitely have 1 player that you can attack freely. Like, not everybody's gonna have a 7/7, right?
Yeah.
So yeah,
and the vigilance on this is probably the best aspect of it because you can attack and hold it back to block. So I like this card quite a bit. It's powerful.
Has trample. Xenagos makes it another very, make it into a 12/12.
Yeah,
again, you're gonna get the trigger. That's pretty cool. I also, hear me out here,
listening.
Oh, okay, so cards we never talk about. Vidalcan Orrery,
what's that do?
Leyline of Anticipation, Alchemist Refuge,
I'm Catching Your Drift,
Yeva, Nature's Herald, Winding Canyon. These are all ways to get Elder Gargaroth out at instant speed. Because don't overlook the fact that when it blocks,
right,
you get the trigger. So here's a way to flash it out, block, get your card draw, eat something probably, and then attack with it on your turn as though it kind of had haste. So if you're playing that suite of cards, Maybe not all of them, but a certain amount of them in your deck, then I would consider Elder Gargaroth for it because the surprise factor, get the value again on the attack, just seems very high.
Yeah. This card seems like one of those things that generates so much value, however, isn't an instant remove. You're probably going to get a trigger off it at least once, and it has upside if you can cast it at instant speed. It just seems like one of those very evergreen, very good cards, and supports a lot of different, you know, things with the token generation and just having card draw on a creature that is going to, again, 6 damage, not to be, you know, understated. That's a lot.
Extra attack steps too could work good.
Oh,
with,
yeah,
Elder Gargaroth, because you might as well get the trigger more than once. I don't think this is a goes in CEDH Dex level card, right? Because
no.
You may or may not be able to attack, but it's nice in the, you know, 5 to 7 range decks, as I think this is going to be a card that you're happy with. It's going to, you know, after it dies or the game's over or whatever, you're going to be like, man, that Elder Gargaroth, it did a lot.
Did a lot of work.
Yeah.
Good job, Elder Gargaroth. As we would expect of an elder. The next up is our first cat that we're going to talk about. Feline Sovereign. The flavor on this is actually hilarious. It's 2 and a green for a 2/3 creature cat. Other cats you control get +1/+1 and have protection from dogs. And whenever one or more cats you control deals combat damage to a player, destroy up to one target, artifact, or enchantment that player controls. It's like a cat swiping something off the desk.
Yeah, it's like it was left at home and it's like breaking something on accident.
There's a cup that's like overturned in the art, which I think is hilarious. So this is like the Trigon Predator, but for cats.
Mm-hmm.
And the cat, this Feline Sovereign itself, does not need to attack for it to trigger. It's whatever one or more cats you control deal combat damage. So that's kind of cool.
But only destroy one thing. So if you hit with three cats.
Yes, you only get one.
You only get one artifact, yeah.
Yeah.
Rin and Sari, the new commander that's the Biobox promo that cares about cats and dogs. Obviously, I think this is a shoe-in for that
deck.
Definitely
put it into that deck for sure. Giving this creature double strike is actually pretty cool here, too.
Yeah, so if you can give the Feline Sovereign or any of your cats while it's out double strike, it will destroy two artifacts, because it's each time, it's whenever one or more cats deal combat damage. So it deals combat damage on first strike damage, trigger, destroy an artifact. Then it deals regular damage, trigger, destroy an artifact.
This is one of those cards when you play it, everyone goes, oh no, I have to block it.
Yeah, they're like looking at their board, oh crap, I don't want to lose my, yeah.
Yeah, actually, this next card does work in the Rin and Sari deck. Chandra's Ignition, 3 red, target creature control deals damage equal to its power to each other creature and opponent. However, cats have protections from dogs, so you could cast this on a dog and ignite the world, and all your cats are like, huh, we're good.
Oh, gotcha. I thought you were thinking of it as a...
as a deal damage, yeah.
Yeah, because it says combat damage, but yeah,
but the protection from dogs is interesting, so that's cute. Good job, Feline Sovereign.
Good job.
I think this is definitely a card that you want to play in any of the tribal decks. If you have a changeling decks, this definitely is pretty neat too. Just as like another effect to do this type of thing.
Yeah, cat tribal. All right. The next one is Garrick's Harbinger. 1 green for a 4/3 beast. Has hexproof from black. Not protection. Hexproof from black. So it can't be targeted by your opponent's black spells. Yeah. It says, whenever Garrick's Harbinger deals combat damage to a player or planeswalker, look at that many cards from the top of your library. You may reveal a creature card or Garrick Planeswalker card from among them and put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. So this conditionally will draw you a card. Garrick's Harbinger is a 4/3, so if it's not blocked, you'll look at the top four cards of your library and usually put a creature from among them into your hand.
Unless you're doing Garrick Tribal like we talked about earlier.
Even then, what do you got, like 5 Garricks in your whole deck?
Yeah, but you know.
That'd be a lot, actually. You probably have 3.
Right. Give this thing some double strike, pump up its power.
Yeah, double strike.
The only thing it doesn't have is trample, and hexproof from black is not protection, so you can still get blocked by black creatures.
Yep.
So I think this is a pretty mid-tier card, but again, if you're playing that Garrick Tribal, it seems pretty sweet there.
I mean, it's a 3-mana 4/3. That's nothing to scoff at. Has some protection innate. It's probably going to be able to swing on turn 4, and probably somebody's going to have to take it. So a 3-mana draws you a card. It's not that bad.
What about a 5-mana 6/6 that does the same thing?
Yeah, true. I mean, 5 and 3 is a lot different, though.
True.
Yeah.
You
have to have a high creature density. I think you have to have 30-plus creatures in your deck to really want this, because if it's all of a sudden drawing you only a half a card or 2/3 of a card, it gets quite a bit worse.
Yeah, blanking on this really feels bad. And in general, like, you're right, you should be able to swing with this in turn 4. People, I think, don't like to trade off creatures, especially because for the most part, we're playing creatures with value that we want to stick around for whatever reason. So this can get past a lot of board states unless they have just a bunch of chump blockers around.
Yeah, but usually not the case. I think you're going to get a couple of swings, which is a couple of cards. I think it's got some value.
Yeah.
I mean, we play Timna to draw cards. Obviously can draw a lot more than just one card, but still.
All right, more Garrick time. It's Garrick's Uprising, 2 and a green for an enchantment. When it enters the battlefield, if you control a creature with power 4 or greater, draw a card. Creatures you control have trample, and whenever a creature with power 4 or greater enters the battlefield under your control, draw a card. So there's a lot of drawing cards here. Cares about power 4 or greater creatures. I mean, I think like power 4 or greater dot deck is definitely something, especially
they've
in
been
green.
Pushing lately the last few years. Yeah.
There's like a bunch of bears that come in at this 4/2s, right? And they basically all turn into cantrips at this point. And so a very creature-based deck. If you're playing a Goreclaw Terror of Khalsesma deck, you love creatures with power 4 or greater because it costs less to cast. Josh, your Titania Protector of Argoth deck seems like it's pretty good here too.
Yeah, it makes 5/3 tokens, and this doesn't say non-token, so if you can make big tokens, you will draw cards off all of them.
Yeah.
And you want the trample too.
Yes, definitely. This works in the Gargos Vicious Watcher deck if you're playing a bunch of Hydras. Now they cost a lot cheaper, and they're all fighting creatures as well. Geared.
Yeah, it makes the 4-4 rhinos.
Yep. So I think there's a lot of ways for green and red to do this. The Omnaths work as well because they're making 5/5s. Mm-hmm. And with landfall, there's ways to trigger this multiple times a turn. Garrick's Uprising just seems like a very high value card.
Yeah.
Super high value.
The trample, too. I would say like this draws a card when you play it.
Mm-hmm.
Right, as long as you have a creature power 4 or greater, which presumably you will when you play this card.
Yeah,
and that's the time, like that's an effect that green decks want. They want to give their creatures trample. How many times have you been playing and you're just like, ugh, they can block 3 of these and that makes my attack not that great even if I kill the 3 things.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't get through and kill them, whereas if I just had some form of evasion, which trample is, I can maybe finish them off. So, but you don't often want a card that that's all it does because it's just not enough value. The fact that it replaces itself kind of, and then it eventually maybe does more than that, I think mm-hmm. is really good. This next card that we've got on the list, I think is really good with it. It's Azuri's Predation.
Azuri's Predation, yeah. Oh my gosh.
Because Azuri's Predation, no! Yeah.
You're drawing so many cards.
Yeah, because for every creature your opponents control, you create a 4-4, and then each of those 4-4s fights one of the creatures your opponents controls. So you just play Azuri's Predation, and if there's 7 creatures that your opponents have, you draw 7 cards right there. And then you probably kill some of their creatures, maybe not all.
Yeah.
And then you keep whatever 4-4s were left alive after that. Like,
and they all have trample.
Yeah. Rough. Azuri's Predation I've found to be quite good.
Yeah, it requires a board state in a meta that has more creatures, but even if you're only getting 5/4 off of it, right, that's 4x4. That's 16 power on the battlefield, 8 mana.
And now you're drawing 5 cards or something on top of it, so you're
probably killing most everything on the battlefield as you're doing it.
Yeah.
Teemer Ascendancy works really well with this as well, because it gives your creatures haste, and so now you can play a creature with power 4 or greater, and Teemer Ascendancy lets you draw a card. You're going to draw another one from Garrick's Uprising. They have haste and trample.
This was the card I thought is the most similar to Garrick's Uprising, and yeah. I thought like comparing them was interesting. So Teemer Ascendancy is Teemer, as you would guess. It's green, blue, and red, 3 mana for an enchantment. It says creatures you control have haste, but it says whenever a creature with power 4 or greater enters the battlefield under your control, you may draw a card.
Hmm.
So this obviously goes only in specific colors of deck, whereas Garrick's Uprising can go in any deck with green. So, mm-hmm. But Trample versus Haste also draws a card when it comes in, where Teemer Ascendancy does not. I think this is in a lot of ways better than Teemer Ascendancy. Obviously, the Haste is kind of on a different axis, so you may value that higher depending on the deck. But Garrick's Uprising is, I think, maybe a little bit better in more decks than Teemer Ascendancy is.
Ascendancy can sometimes be hard to cast as well. And yeah. If you are playing red, you do have access to haste enablers in general. Otherwise, you don't have as many in green. Mm-hmm. So they're very similar. Play them both. Why not? Go nuts.
Play them both. Why not?
Why not?
All right. Let's talk about the next card, which is Lanwar Visionary.
Mm-hmm.
This is a Lanwar Elves and an Elvish Visionary stapled together. It's 2 and a green. For a 2/2 elf druid, when it enters the battlefield, draw a card. That's the visionary part. And you can tap it to add green to your mana pool. That's the Lanwar Elves part.
Yeah, cool.
And this is what it would exactly cost, because Lanwar right. Elves is one it's green and the other one. Yeah, exactly.
This card just seems like a very generically good card for a lot of decks. I think if you open this and you want to put it into a green deck, you are more than happy to, for the most part. It's not like amazing, but there are a lot of different places where I think it works. People have been talking about Yisan the Wanderer Bard, because you can pay 2 and green to tap Yisan to put a verse counter on Yisan, then you search your library for a creature card with converted mana cost equal to the number of verse counters. So people are trying to build chains of value
like
creatures
kinda, yeah.
that go up the chain, and Lanwar Visionary now being a 3-mana spell allows you to put another card into that 3-mana slot.
Mm-hmm.
I think Annamar, Soul of Elements, pretty fun with this one. Generally, on the turns you win with Annamar, it's like kind of, you want the Zendikar Resurgent type effect, where you're drawing a card every time you cast a creature, and Lanwar Visionary can come down for 1 green, draw you a card, and potentially add more mana if you have haste enablers.
And if you get it out early, you might want the mana ramp from it.
Yeah, totally. You could definitely go a little crazy. Teemer Sabertooth likes cards like this as well. Again, just more value in those types of decks. Kyle Hill, could you put this in Selvala? Is this good enough for CDH? My mind says probably not for CDH.
Yeah, I don't think you want that in the Selvala deck, just because it also costs 3 mana and it doesn't do what your deck wants to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Marwyn, now this one, I could see it working.
Yeah, because this is Elf Tribal. It's a 1-1, 2 and a green elf that whenever another elf enters the battlefield under your control, you put a +1/+1 counter on Marwyn. Then you can tap to add an amount of green equal to Marwyn's power. Tons of cards in the elf decks to untap your tappers. You can tad bunches of mana. Go nuts with all that sort of synergy.
I think this is good in my rune deck because where it sits on the curve is pretty nice. So it's 3 mana, which means on the next turn you play your land, you can cast rune with it. That's 5. Okay. And then you can blink it with rune to draw the cards after that. So it kind of does everything you want to do. I think, you know, this card is probably not quite as good as some people think it is because generally you want your mana dorks to be 1 or 2 mana. 1 if preferable. 1's a lot better than 2. And 3 is generally too much for something that taps for mana, even with the added value of draw card. But I think with the right synergies, definitely this card is playable, but I don't think it's like put in every green deck. A lot of times you're going to be better off just playing the Llanowar Elves.
And 3 mana is a very crowded slot. Yeah. I think it's probably the most crowded slot in EDH decks, just because there's so many cards in that slot.
Yeah, I would guess, and it'd be interesting to hear people go check it out. If you have your decks up on Architect or Tapped Out or whatever you've got, if you just went down your decks and looked at the curve, I bet that like almost all of them, the 3 mana slot would be the largest part of the deck. That's my guess.
Yeah, even in limited decks, it tends to be that way.
Yeah. All right, let's go on to the next card here. It is Primal Might. It's green and X for a sorcery. Target creature you control gets +X/+X until end of turn. Then it fights up to 1 target creature you don't control.
All right. So X Tribal. X gonna give it to you. Zexara the Exemplary is sort of the Sultai commander that you tap to add 2 mana of any one color. However, when you cast a spell with X in its mana cost, you create a 0/0 green Hydra token to put +1/+1 counters on it. Primal Might, by the way, just for green, is a fight spell.
That's what I was going to say. I think that's an underrated usage because you're in green.
Right.
You just have a larger creature than whatever you want to kill. You don't have to make X equal to anything. You can just be green. Kill that thing. That's pretty good.
Yeah. I'm down for this.
And obviously, if it's smaller, you can just be like, okay, X is equal to 2, and then I get enough to kill it. But you don't have to do that if you don't have to.
Yeah. Of course, Unbound Flourishing is a card that I'm always kind of looking to find cards that fit with it. Primal Might, because it's an instant or sorcery, you can activate it twice because you get to copy that spell or ability because it contains X in it, and you can choose new targets. So Primal Might becomes like a double removal spell in that deck now.
That's cool.
I like Jerahd Golgari Lichlord a lot here because you can sack another creature and each opponent loses life equal to the sacrificed creature's power. So if you Primal Might something to be massive and then sack it with Jerahd, you might just kill everyone.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Especially, I mean, this has Galta on the card, and Galta is
If you Primal Might Galta, yeah.
Make him huge, sack him, everyone loses 20 life or something.
Yeah, it's Ghost Galta.
It's Ghost, yeah, it's a shaman channeling Galta.
Wow.
Flavor text is pretty sweet on that one.
Xanagos, we've been mentioning a lot. It's good with a lot of green cards, sort of stompy cards. And this is like a put all your mana into, you know, let's say you have Elder Gargaroth and you know, give it X is equal to 8. So it's a 14/14, kills the blocker, attacks for 28, draws your card.
With haste and vigilance.
Gargaroth.
You know, why not?
All right, the last green card, I think it's your turn to read it.
Spore-Web Weaver. 2 and a green for a 1/4 creature spider. Reach and hexproof from blue. Whenever Spore-Web Weaver is dealt damage, you gain 1 life and you create a 1/1 green sapperling creature token. Huh.
So I think, yeah, you want decks that are able to deal damage to their own stuff, right? You're not going to play this card hoping that your opponents will choose to deal damage to it, because newsflash, they're not going to do that. They're going to be like, oh, you got that thing? I'm going to attack somebody else or do something else.
Yeah. Or I'm going to attack with something that, sure, you can create a 1-1, but it's going to kill the Spore-Web Weaver. Yeah, it's just a 1-4 here.
I'm going to attack with my Elder Gargaroth. What are you going to do?
Not block, yeah.
Yeah, so if you got Pestilence, Pyrohemia in your deck, and you have green, you could think about it because those are great engines of like, you know, ping everything for 1, make a 1-1. Obviously, if you do it again, you're going to kill the 1-1 that you made. So
you actually
gain
the life back, too, yes. Which is interesting.
Yeah, so you stay even on life. So you even might be able to combine that with, like, a Phyrexian Altar or something, right? So you're like, actually
that's a great
we just
combo.
Put together the combo, right?
We did it.
Phyrexian Altar, Spore-Web Weaver, and either Pyrohemia and Pestilence will win the game because you Pestilence for 1, that hits the Spore-Web Weaver and everybody for 1, but you gain the life back and you make a sapperling token. You sack it to Phyrexian Altar to make the black mana to activate Pestilence again, and now you're in an infinite loop. Wow, we comboed out on the show.
Cool.
There you go.
We're going infinite, so this episode will never end now.
I just realized the pestilence thing doesn't work.
What?
Spore Weaver will die.
Yeah, you're right. You have to give it indestructible. Okay, it's a three-card combo now.
Or you could do it for three times on your turn, three on your the next turn, three on the next turn, because damage wears off. Okay, anyway.
Someone's already commenting, and they're like slowly deleting it now. I couldn't type fast enough. It's okay. There's still going to be some comments that make
I got to turn off my caps lock.
I got to unthumbs it down now. The video. Jeez.
You wrote down the pingers deck, the Tim deck.
Yeah.
Which definitely, because you can ping your own stuff. So just saying like, oh, you know, I'm just going to hold everything up. And then on the end step before my turn, I didn't really have to kill anything or anything. I'm just going to use my two Tims and make 2/1/1 saplings. Pretty
Gain
good.
Some life. Yeah.
Pretty good value. I put enrage decks.
Oh, here. Right. That's sort of the dinosaur mechanic. When you deal damage to something, it enrages and that triggers an effect.
Right. So. Are there any enrage decks?
You know, I tried to build a couple and it wasn't great. And sometimes you're just putting in these random cards to trigger enrage, but they're not that great either. Yeah. Maybe you can sort of build one that's all about pinging and enrage, you know, sort of putting all these themes together. I could see that working.
So when we do these set reviews, often we're like, you know, we're looking at all the cards and we put these cards down and which ones are we going to talk about? And it gets fun because you're like, oh, this card will work with that one. This will look. And then you want to kind of bring yourself back down to reality here because, you know, when you're forced to think of interactions with a card, you often come up with cool stuff. And then I was like, yeah, this card's a lot like Hornet Nest, and nobody plays Hornet Nest.
So sad.
So it's like, oh, I got really excited about this card, and then I think, maybe...
It's not so great.
Yeah. So Hornet Nest is 1 and a green for...
2 and a green.
Sorry, 2 and a green for an 0-2, right?
Yeah.
And then whenever it's dealt damage, you create that many 1-1 green insect creature tokens with flying and death touch.
Hmm.
So it makes way better tokens than the Spore Web Weaver does. And like I said, nobody plays Hornet Nest really. So it's cool interactions and I hope everybody out there is excited. But the reality of the situation is I don't think anyone's really going to use this card.
No, but maybe we're still looking for that Pinger Enrage deck in probably Naya colors. You're probably doing it like in a Zakama type deck maybe because you can, I don't know, who knows? You know what? Just have fun.
That's true. As they give us more pieces, eventually you hit the tipping point where that kind of deck becomes viable. Maybe Spore Web Weaver doesn't push us over the edge, but it gets a little closer. So maybe in a couple years or something, that deck becomes something that you could, you know.
Yeah.
You could viably do.
Okay. We've been doing this new thing now when we do these set reviews. We talk about how did the color fare? So we're going to ask ourselves here, looking at all of the green cards, and we're not, of course, we can't forget Garrick Unleashed as well as the green shrine here.
And let's not forget Jor-El.
Jor-El, right. Yeah. The card that I played as my commander on the M21 Game Nights. So I am going to probably say this for all of the colors, but I think in a core set, it's all about like going back to the roots of what the colors are. There are very few multicolored cards in these sets. I think green is very much representing what it likes to do the most, with a little bit of variation here with the Feline Sovereign and the Sanctum, I guess, because the shrines are a new addition to this current meta.
I mean, I like they didn't create any new cards that like cheat lands into play or really. We've got Rada, obviously, that cares about lands, but I like that they didn't do that. We've got plenty of that. Stop doing that, please. and sort of leaned back towards, you know, big creatures and things like that. Garrick is one of the better planeswalkers, probably the second best one. Jor-El is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So I think green did, you know, pretty good. You know, good. Somewhere around a B or something.
A B range, yeah. It didn't obviously have a Teferi Master of Time, but it's doing the things that green does best and giving you a couple of other options to do it, which is honestly all I would want from a core set.
And specifically for green, I don't want them to do well. I'd be happy if green got Ds for the next couple of sets. Again, they're just... feel like they've been pulling away from the rest of the pack for a little while here.
Yeah.
So the fact that they don't have anything super, super powerful, totally fine with. Yeah. You know, they've got some niche pieces and some stuff you can use, but there's nothing amazing, which I think is fine.
I think Elder Gargaroth, probably my favorite green card, followed by Garrick's Uprising.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's always cool to see as well when an uncommon makes it into the set reviews, because normally the uncommons, especially in core sets, are a bit more underpowered and they're not as flashy. So good job, green. Nothing too crazy, nothing too overpowered. We appreciate it, and we thank you for your service.
Okay, let's go on to white.
All right, white has some interesting cards here, and spoiler alert, this one is, I think, a great card for budget players and for people who just haven't an extra version of this. And again, if white's playing into things it does best, maybe it's about exiling creatures. So Angelic Ascension is 1 and a white for an instant. Exile target creature or planeswalker. Its controller creates a 4/4 white angel creature token with flying at an instant speed, 2 mana, sort of a Path to Exile version. Costs a little bit more, but instead of them getting a land, they get a 4/4 white angel creature token.
And it hits planeswalkers.
Yeah, that's actually pretty cool.
Pretty big, right? Because white, is there another card white has that they do permanents or non-land permanents, like Oblation and things like that? But I don't think they have an exile
planeswalker.
Yeah, so that's pretty sweet.
We've already talked about one planeswalker that must get exiled as well the moment it gets hits the board. Yeah, so
hit that Teferi as soon as possible.
I think we're gonna see a lot of this card, actually.
I think it's quite good.
Yeah, because again, you can target yourself. I was thinking about the planeswalkers from Dominaria that, or it was the Dominaria War of the Spark, that would like go down to one loyalty and then they don't really do anything anymore. Targeting your own planeswalker, or let's say you play a planeswalker and everyone's swinging out it, you know it's going to be gone anyway. Angelic Ascension, your own thing, make a 4/4, get a little bit of value out of that.
Or something that's getting removed anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
You just go, boom, I'd rather have a 4/4. I think most of the time you are going to use this on your opponent's stuff. I had a question here. So Path to Exile, it exiles target creature for 1 white mana, and then that creature's controller puts a basic land into play. What's better? What do you think is... If you're... Let's say I gave you the choice. You can get a land into play... Or a 4/4 flying angel. What do you think you're doing most of the time?
The problem with the 4/4 is it's a token. It's easily removed by a lot of different things. However, you're most likely going to just swing at the person that removed the thing with the 4/4. So it's kind of like singularly focused unless they have a lot of blockers. 4/4s, I found flyers almost always have a person to swing at. Like,
yeah, you can always get through. Yeah.
Guaranteed, almost.
I think I'm taking the land every time, though.
I think I am taking the land
almost every
too,
time.
Just because the ramp is, especially if you're in colors that's needing for it. Like, there have been times where something gets pathed, and I'm like, sweet. Okay, yeah, I lost a creature, but I'm actually hitting more land drops as a result, and that's great.
Especially if it's early. Like, if it's turn 4 or 5, you're like, that's going to give me 5 or 6 mana
right,
for this game.
Right.
Yeah, so I think this might actually... Like, this is pretty good then if its downside is not as big as Path to Exile a lot of the time and it hits an additional card type. I like this quite a bit. I think it's going to see a decent amount of play for sure.
Yeah, and it's uncommon, which means there's going to be a lot of them running around. I presume this is going to make it into a lot of decks that just want a little bit more flexibility with the removal spells.
All right, the next one is Basri's Lieutenant. 3 and a white for a 3/4 human knight. Has vigilance and protection from multicolored. When Basri's Lieutenant enters the battlefield, you put a 1/1 counter on target creature you control. Could put it onto Basri's Lieutenant, which would make it a 4/5.
Wow.
And then whenever Basri's Lieutenant or another creature you control dies, if it had a +1/+1 counter on it, you create a 2/2 white knight creature token with vigilance. So your stuff with 1/1 counters on it turns into knights.
Right. That's kind of cool. With Cathar's Crusade, you're putting +1/+1 counters every single time you lose a creature with a sac outlet. Now you're making a ton of mana and you're just making infinite mana.
Right, because you
sac a creature that has
a 1/1 counter on it, and then it creates a knight which enters the battlefield and gets a 1/1 counter from Cathar's Crusade. And then,
just do it over and again. That's a mono white infinite mana combo right there, which is kind of cool if you're using the altars.
Yep.
That's pretty good. Bloodspore Thrynax is a 2 green 2/2 with devour 1, so you can sacrifice any number of creatures, and then this creature enters the battlefield with that many +1/+1 counters on it. And it says each other creature you control enters the battlefield with an additional +1/+1 counters, where X is the number of +1/+1 counters on Bloodspore Thrynax. So that's just a way to make sure that all of your creatures are coming in with those +1/+1 counters.
Same thing with the altar too. You can
sack. Go.
Metallic Mimic, you name knights. Boom, you get +1/+1 counters onto the knights, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's created the 2/2. Grumgully the Generous. There's a lot of things that are +1/+1 counter themed decks.
Renata. There's a lot of stuff that basically says if you have a creature coming to play, it's going to get a +1/+1 counter, which with Basri's Lieutenant means that every time you sack that creature, it comes back as a knight with a +1/+1 counter that continues, because Basri's Lieutenant does not say when... it or another non-token creature you control dies.
It's just any time. Zamek Guildmage is a card where you can pay a green and a blue to remove +1/+1 counters and draw a card, but now you're going into the green blue white decks.
It also has the activated ability that same as like Cathars and everything, where every creature for this turn that enters the battlefield under your control comes in with +1/+1 counter. So again, with the knights, you just Yeah. Sack, sack, sack.
Yep, yep, yep.
Sack, sack, sack.
Gave, Guru of Spores. There's a billion ways to go infinite with Gave. Basri's Lieutenant works in this kind of deck, obviously. So I think Mono White is actually getting a bit of a fun boost here with Basri's Lieutenant. There's a lot of value stapled on this card. It doesn't say draw a card, doesn't ramp you, but it does make a lot of creatures, and there are ways to go infinite with it.
Yeah, going to work a lot in Aristocrats decks too, right? Which is like, yeah, I'm not going infinite, but this just allows me to sack my creatures twice.
Right, you know? Yeah, two creatures, so, yeah.
All right, the next card is pretty interesting. It's called Idol of Endurance. Two and a white for an artifact. When Idol of Endurance enters the battlefield, exile all creature cards with converted mana cost three or less from your graveyard until Idol of Endurance leaves the battlefield.
Hey, okay, interesting.
Then you could pay one and a white and tap the Idol of Endurance. And it says, until end of turn, you may cast a creature spell from among the cards exiled with Idol of Endurance without paying its mana cost. So you can only cast one, but it gives you access to all the three CMC or less cards that you exiled out of your graveyard earlier.
Yeah, all the creatures. Interesting. Yeah.
So this is kind of pseudo card draw, and it's repeatable, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I mean, I like this quite a bit. Obviously, when you play it, you have to have a lot of three CMC things, because if you only have like two, well, you're only going to be able to get two cards off this, which makes it not that great.
It's still two cards that Mono White typically wouldn't have as much access to unless you're playing like a Sun Titan, right?
And it's limited because you can't get any card. It's only three CMC or less creatures. But if you're doing some self-mill or you play this a little later in the game and you can reliably get like 4 to 5 plus cards, this is actually a decent engine. And this actually could be a little better than just drawing a card, because, you know, when you just say draw a card, you can get a land when you don't need one. This mm-hmm. gives you a choice of certain amount of cards, so it's a little more powerful than just drawing cards. Interesting how they're sort of trying to give white some card advantage and some card draw here. I kind of like it. And of course, there are some interesting interactions too with how it's worded.
Yeah, definitely would want to untap this if I can, but I think Tyam is, you know, again, this is a card that Josh tried to build and went, nah.
It's going to be really good, but it's also going to be a lot of accounting and dirtling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Tyam wants to, you know, return permanence with CMC 3 or less from a graveyard to the battlefield and wants to mill. So Idol of Endurance feels like it has a good fit there.
Mm-hmm.
Lurrus is another mm-hmm. card that wants to cast cards with CMC 2 or less from your graveyard. So I could see a really like low to the ground deck here.
So that most of your cards are there and they're mostly creatures and you're likely to get a lot of stuff off Idol. Yeah.
Yeah. But the only problem is, again, you can only use it once a turn because you have to tap it. So if you can find ways to untap this, but then you're reaching outside of the colors of mono white. And I think a lot of times we rate cards on this show, if they are white, to look if they do a good benefit to mono white. Because it's like, yes, you can put this card in any deck and probably find a better version of it or something that has more value. So I'm primarily looking at this in mono white, maybe two color decks to see how it works out.
Yeah, with red too. I think it's because they often have a lot of small creatures, so this could be useful there.
Mm-hmm. You can definitely endure with Mike recasting them a bunch. Tesa, Orzhov's Scion is a card that where you're sacrificing white creatures to exile a target creature, so Idol can sort of get them back.
Mm.
Tashar, Ancestor's Apostle. Whenever you cast a historic spell, return target creature card with CMC 3 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. So again, there's a theme emerging here, which is just three CMC or less creatures slash permanents.
That's nice, though, because it does mean that like your deck can really function with a lot of synergy, because if you keep all your creatures three CMC or less, you actually have enough payoffs maybe now for that to be a thing.
Right, 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 right.
I like that.
Yeah, and Josh Kim plays an Alesha deck that might want to play a card like this. It's a Mardu deck, is constantly looking for ways to generate a little bit more value. So this, I mean, again, these three CMC cards, Alesha cares about creatures with power two or less from your graveyard. Mm-hmm. So Idol of Endurance seems like I enjoy where this is going. I'm like, all right, cool. I'm down with this. This is pseudo mono white card draw. It's an interesting effect. You have to jump through a tiny hoop to get there, but hey, not bad. Not that bad.
Okay, let's go to Magical Christmas Land for a second here with a cool interaction.
My favorite place to be.
Okay, so Sir Conrad, we've been talking a lot about lately. Do you want to read it real quick?
Yep. It's a 3BB legendary 5/4. Whenever another creature dies or a creature card is pinned to a graveyard anywhere other than the battlefield or a creature card leaves your graveyard, Sir Conrad deals 1 damage to each opponent, and you can pay 1 in the black to have every player mill the top card of their library into their graveyard.
So anytime a creature goes to the graveyard from anywhere,
mm-hmm.
it deals 1 damage for each of those creatures. And anytime a creature leaves the graveyard, it does the damage, right?
Right.
So when you play Idol of Endurance, all those creatures are getting exiled. So that with Sir Conrad is going to deal damage equal to however many creatures that is that you're exiling, right? And then notice Idol of Endurance says until Idol of Endurance leaves the battlefield.
So
what happens is you exile all the cards, but if Idol of Endurance were to leave the battlefield, all those cards go back into the graveyard.
Oh.
Which triggers Sir Conrad, because they're going to the graveyard from anywhere.
Other than the battlefield, specifically, yeah, from exile this time, yeah.
And if you could get Idol of Endurance back out, then they would then exile again, triggering Sir Conrad again. So that's what we call blinking a thing, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So Aminatu is actually in colors that would be white and black and blue, all mill colors too. So
and could, all blink colors, white and blue.
Yeah, so Aminatu can actually do the blinking of the idol because Aminatu's negative one is exile another target permanent you own, then return it to the battlefield under your control. So boom, boom.
Turbo mill.
Turbo mill yourself, maybe you could get 20... 3 CMC or less things in there.
Right.
Exile them all with idol. That's 20 damage to everybody. Blink your idol. That's 40 damage. More damage, right? 20 because yeah. They go in, then they come out. So that'd be 60 damage right there. You don't even need 20. Maybe what would do
even
it?
Just 13? 10 could do it, right?
Yeah.
Doing 30 to everyone, and because they have to be creatures with the Isle of Endurance. But you could also find more ways to flicker your cards now, right? You could flicker it in a bunch of different ways in these colors, blue and white.
So yeah, that, I mean, that's obviously two cards that are not your commander.
Maybe
in a
the
deck but...
type is killing your opponents with net while never swinging at them, or
all your little CMC creatures.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah. They're like, oh, I get it. You're like an aggro Aminatu deck, and you're like, huh, just wait until I get this 3-card combo out, and no one interrupts it.
My dreams, Jimmy.
I'm gonna do it. Actually, that's really cool. Sir Conrad again, though. I think this just speaks more to Sir Conrad than anything else. It just does it on every single. It does it all the time.
Yeah, that wasn't a scenario that showed off the power of Idol of Endurance. Showed off the power of Sir Conrad.
Yeah, we happen to do that a lot in the show, I think. All right, coming up with potentially the cutest card I think I've ever seen. It's called 9 Lives. Yeah. 1WW for an enchantment with hexproof. If a source would deal damage to you, prevent that damage and put an incarnation counter on 9 Lives. When there are 9 or more incarnation counters on 9 Lives, exile it. When 9 Lives leaves the battlefield, you lose the game. So this has hexproof. Aminatu could just blink it and make you lose immediately. Don't do that. This is an interesting card. I think you don't want to hold on to this card. I think you want to give it to someone else.
Yeah, I liked that a lot when you talked about it. I think you probably want to maybe... Do you even wait around to try and get some counters on it, or do you just give it away right away?
You give it away, and then you cast Cyclonic Rift. Oh, and then they lose the game. Because when it leaves the battlefield, you lose the game.
Yep.
It has hexproof, so you can't just single target it, but things that, you know...
Bounce all non-line permanents. There's a few of those. Yeah. So how do we give it to people?
Well, Zedru the Greathearted is your Jeskai version. You can pay Jeskai to give a control of target permanent you own. Aminatu is definitely not good here.
Nope.
Solemnity is also an interesting card because players can't get counters, and you can't put counters on artifacts, creatures, enchantments, or lands. So this is one
just
if you want to keep
all
it for yourself.
You for getting damage dealt to you forever, basically, because you can't put the counters on it.
If you give this to someone else, they also can't have the counters on it. So they'll be like, oh, what a great gift, and then you bounce it somehow. Harmless Offering, which has a cat on it. Perfect.
That's actually, it looks like the same cat.
Well, it's going to have a weird tail, though, so we can't really see the tail on this one, so maybe...
I'm assuming the tail's weird off camera there.
Yeah. This cat has lived 9 lives, and...
What does Harmless Offering do?
2 and a red sorcery, target opponent gains control of target permanent you control. So, you don't want to play this card, I don't think, to be honest, unless you're very specifically trying to give it away, because there are just too many things that kill you.
Yeah, there's not a ton, right? It has to... Because of the hexproof, so obviously... It's a pretty big downside that the most played card in the format besides Sol Ring is the card that gets you, but there's not a ton of those. I think, it's not a great card to play, but I think you could play it if you have a plan for dealing damage to yourself that you want to prevent. So like Command the Dreadhorde is a card that you choose any number of target creatures and or planeswalkers in all graveyards, and then Command the Dreadhorde deals damage to you equal to the total converted mana cost of those cards, and you put the those cards onto the battlefield under your control. So this would prevent all that damage from Command the Dreadhorde.
Mm.
So if you had a plan like that, and I think you can't just have Command the Dreadhordes in your deck and then play any 9 lives. You need a few cards that care about that kind of thing, and then maybe you could think about it. Also, you could run Stifle effects and some other things to like save yourself from the trigger if you had to.
Yeah.
That's a lot to build around.
Yeah. You wrote Angel's Grace here, which says you can't lose the game this turn. Your opponents can't win the game. It's also a mono white card. So maybe there is a deck that is kind of just like, you can never touch me. I have cards like nine lives. Maybe you have a couple ways to remove counters off it.
And if you happen to draw your Cyclonic Rift, I will have an answer in hand to stifle the trigger or do something.
Yeah.
And still survive Angel's Grace or whatever. Yeah. Listen, I was just grasping because that's what we do for these episodes.
We are definitely grasping hard. I think in general, unless you're trying to give this card away, probably not super playable. Yeah. But man, that art. Look at those kitties. I like the idea that the nine lives it's lived is as all these epic cats, lions cats and lionesses. Yeah. And this is just this
Mufasa's
like small.
Is definitely up there.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. The last white card we're going to talk about is Speaker of the Heavens. It's one white mana for a 1/1 human cleric with vigilance and lifelink. But you can tap it and create a 4/4 white angel creature token with flying. Activate this ability only if you have at least 7 life more than your starting life total, and only anytime you could cast a sorcery. So if you're at 47 or more, you can tap Speaker of the Heavens at sorcery speed and create a 4/4 flying white angel. This is Angel Master Outcast.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a 1-mana angel, yeah. Or a 1-mana
angel maker.
Cleric, angel maker, yeah. The sorcery speed definitely hurts it a little bit. Getting up to 47 life, probably not too hard.
If you really want to, I think that's pretty easy if your deck's built around that. In a life gain deck, would you even play this though? I don't like the sorcery speed. It's conditional. You'd want haste. I don't know.
I could see this as being a player. As in, like, when you put it out, no one looks at it because they don't take you that seriously. But making 4/4s once a turn, not the worst.
Not the worst. Luminarch Ascension, though. Just play that.
I know. Play both.
All right, let's talk about white and how white fared. Don't forget, we've got Basri, we've got the Sanctum of Tranquil Light, and we have Mangara.
Oh, right, Mangara.
Which is the new card draw engine. I don't know if it's I should call it that, but it's new white card draw. Basically says anytime your opponent casts their second spell each turn, you draw a card. So
right.
It has other text. If you get attacked, you can draw cards. That's not going to happen very often. It's mostly the second spell thing.
I am somewhat pleased.
Yeah.
Because I think Idol of Endurance and Nine Lives are the two cards that are like, check it out. We're doing something a little different with white now.
And Idol of Endurance is a card advantage card, which white needs.
And so is Mangara.
Yep.
I think the rest of the cards are just fine. I think Angelic Ascension is going to be a bit of a staple in certain decks and just people that were looking for a little more removal. I think white has a good selection of stuff here. Basri's Lieutenant represents an infinite combo that we just talked about. I'm going to say white, you did great. Probably in the BB minus area. It didn't fix any of the problems that we're constantly bagging about, but it does make steps. It doesn't full on fix it.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. But we did get some nods in the direction we're looking for. I think Mangara being the biggest one.
Yeah. And Idol being the second biggest.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm like moderately happy. I wish the step was bigger. I wish they were like being a little more drastic with it to help, because white's behind and just keeping even with everybody is not going to catch them up.
Yeah.
They need to actually catch up. So this is like what I would consider to be on par with like green and what everybody usually does, but which is an improvement because white usually is actually actively falling behind.
Right.
But we actually want white to be actively catching up. So I think we could do a little better, but this is not like anything to really complain about.
Yeah, they're making steps in the right direction. And again, keep in mind that Wizards makes cards 2 years in advance sometimes. So this means that if we were complaining about white 2 years ago, this is
we're starting to see it now. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm very interested to see what happens in the rest of the year. We got those jumpstart promos, spoilers coming out, as well as Commander Legends. I think we're going to be pleasantly surprised by the end of the year. I'm hoping. Fingers crossed.
All right, that's going to do it for part one of our set review. We'll be finishing up part two with the rest of the colors, plus the artifacts, the multicolored cards, the lands, and we're going to be tackling everyone's favorite questions, which is what we think the most powerful new card in the set is. Is it Teferi? Is there something on the next episode even more powerful?
One way to find out.
There might actually be. There's one I think is in contention for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're also going to answer what is our favorite new card.
Which Nine Lives.
Yeah, isn't always the most powerful new
card.
It's got
the cats.
All right, to the listeners, what is your favorite card that we talked about on today's episode? Which do you think is the most powerful? Are there any cards in green or white that you think are awesome that we did not talk about?
Or combos that we didn't realize? We know we almost made a mistake with the infinite combo, so you can stop typing that comment if you're still somehow typing it.
They've been typing it forever then.
Yeah, they've just been like, and then you mess this up, and then you mess this up. They don't sound like that, by the way. So, please let us know. You can comment, you can tweet at us, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all of those are legitimate places to talk to us. And hey, Talked about a lot of cards today. Talked about a lot of combos. And I know some of you out there are itching to make a new mono white deck or a new Boros deck with some of these additions. So go ahead and go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone if you want to pick up any of those singles or sealed products. And let's say you want to draft M21 or you want to get a jumpstart on jumpstart. The cards being spoiled for it already look really exciting. And I think that play format is something that I would just love to have, right? A box of that always. Mm-hmm. Take it to a convention, whip it out, brill a deck together, and play immediately. Sounds like a lot of fun. So
yeah, definitely cardkingdom.com/commandzone is the place to get all your stuff. And when you get all of those cards, you really do want to protect them. You want them to remain in pristine condition, especially if you pull like a Teferi or something. I have a feeling that card's going to be worth quite a bit just from commander demand.
And there's four different versions of it as well, a showcase frame. So there's lots of cool things to protect this time around.
So make sure you get Eclipse sleeves. You get some perfect fit sleeves. You know, Jimmy does this. He likes to double sleeve the stuff. Keep them really, really safe. Yeah. Ultra Pro really does make the best stuff to protect your stuff. Play it on a nice Ultra Pro playmat. I think they even have Teferi theme playmats and sleeves and deck boxes too. So if you want to go all in on Teferi, then Ultra Pro has you covered for sure.
Yeah, definitely make everyone like you more because Teferi, everyone loves Teferi, right? You never see anyone complain about it.
You never see Teferi and people go, they never do that.
Never.
Never, ever. All right, we're going to skip the end step because this is a set review in two parts. We'll cover the end step on part two. So no end step on this episode.
All right. Big thanks, as always, to our editing, graphics, and logistics team here at the Command Zone. We've got Ashlyn Rose, Craig Blanchett, Lady Danger, Manson Lung, Jake's boss. Who is Jake's boss? Us? Josh Murphy, Alfred Estaca, and Sam Waldo.
And special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer, who does the living card animations that begin and end each of our shows and sit behind us here on set. You can find Jeffrey at LivingCardsMTG on Twitter.
All right, everyone. Keep playing. Let us know what cards you're excited about in the comments, and we'll see you next time.
Keep activating your loyalty abilities on everyone else's turn. Have fun with that, everybody.
Oh, boy.
All right. Peace.
Bye.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.